Hello and welcome to the Martial Arts Teaching Tactics Podcast. I'm Chris Kent and I'm joining Chris Bean. Mr. Bean?
Hello, sir.
Today we're going to be talking about the practice makes perfect fallacy. Practice is one of the most important things we can teach our students. Not just the practice of martial arts, of course, that is what we need them to do, but the tools and habits to practice whatever they do correctly. I'm sure that you have heard the saying, practice makes perfect. While it is undeniable that practice is important, practice will not make perfect. How about perfect practice makes perfect? Surely that must be correct, right? What do you think, Mr. Bean?
No, sir.
Still wrong?
Still wrong.
How so?
Well, let me demonstrate it this way. Firstly, can you, as the world's best martial arts instructor, perform your moves perfectly?
No, sir.
No. Sorry to bust your ego, but unfortunately, you cannot. Nor can I. Neither one of us can. Unfortunately, in our society, we put a lot of emphasis on being perfect. That will only set you and your students up for failure. Trying to be perfect is not something that as humans, I think that we can do or that we can be. So trying to strive to be perfect will continually end in disappointment and failure. Second, think for a moment about how many times in your life you've written your name. Is it 1,000, 100,000, a million times, or more? Can you write your name perfectly? Master Kent?
No, sir. It's different every time.
It's different every time, and it rarely, if ever, looks like it came out of a computer or a typewriter. Typewriter, I guess people probably won't know what that means, but like it came off of a printer. How about that? Everybody knows what that is. Of course not. Okay, you cannot write your name perfectly. I'm sure some people out there listening to this might have really excellent penmanship, and it does look awfully well. But perfect, that's hard to achieve, if not impossible. I'm sure it's a great improvement over what your handwriting or your name looked like when you were learning to write and you were 5 years old, but not perfect. So let's stop using that term. Let's take the term perfect out of our vocabulary. Now, I know some of you are thinking, well, some things you can do perfect. I can take this thing apart and put it back together and it'd be perfectly the same. Okay, sure, but is it perfect or is it acceptable? Is it just done? I don't know if perfect applies to everything. I don't think it's an overarching thing. If I took this microphone apart, looked at how it works, put it all back together, it would be all back together and it would be done perfectly. I don't know. I mean, it might be different than how it came from the factory. Maybe the factory had tighter tolerances or the screws were torqued a little bit tighter than I was able to get to, or I torqued them tighter. And because of that, it is now going to be somehow at a disadvantage. But perfect, again, let's just be done with perfect. I don't think trying or striving to be perfect is something that we should work on. Again, that will only end in failure because perfect is, well, it's impossible to be. Now, going back to your name. Imagine for a moment that you're learning to write your name again. Perhaps you have amnesia and you don't remember how to write your name. So you take the time, you write your name over and over and over and so on until you have it pretty well. But in your practice of that, you spelled your name incorrectly. After 10,000 times, 100,000 times, however many it is, you know your name, or you can write your name, rather, pretty well. However, it is still spelled incorrectly. You then have to relearn how to write your name, this time spelling it correctly. So you see, practice doesn't make perfect. Hopefully you can understand the idea that perfect, again, is not something that we should have in our vocabulary. However, I believe that practice makes permanent. You see, the way you practice something is the way that you will perform it. It would be silly to think that your students can practice a pattern of moves at low intensity or poor technique, lack of discipline, only to go to a tournament or a belt test and expect to perform with high intensity, good form, and great discipline. It just won't happen. The way you practice something is the way that you perform it. So if you want to get better at something, practicing it, focusing on getting better is something that you can do. because you're focusing. Let's say you are practicing a pattern of moves, you're doing a form, a kata, and you want to work on your stances, the footwork that you have. So while you're practicing those movements, focus in on those things, making sure that you are doing it the best that you can each and every time that you do them. That is focused and purposeful practice. And by that, practicing makes permanent, meaning, again, if you practice it that way, focusing on those small little details, or maybe they're wider details because you need to have a wider picture to begin with before you can move in to those smaller, more minute details, then you do that. But focusing on those key, small, or big aspects of it, working on improving those things, and then continue to work on those things, that will make those permanent for you. Then, again, practice makes permanent. The way you practice is the way that you will perform that.
I'm sure you can relate, even outside of martial arts, to this idea. You know, the more you do something, the easier it becomes. And having that muscle memory or that connection, just from having done something so many times, you don't have to think about it. Or it's a lot easier than it was before. You know, think about first time you started a job and you had to be taught everything, how to do that job. And then after a few months, you've done that job for a while, doing that job gets a whole lot easier because you've done it so many times. So to your point, you know, putting the repetition in and having the extra practice, you may feel like you're getting better, but unless we are taking the time to check our work or check what we're doing to make sure it is correct, we are just creating that permanent habit. It doesn't mean that it's correct. It just means that we are good at doing that specific thing. So, you know, not chasing perfection, but being aware of how that makes, how that becomes permanent should make the maintenance or the checkups or going back and making sure you're doing things correctly even more important, because it's kind of scary to think that, you know, you believe you're doing something well when you really aren't and you haven't taken the time or had somebody else come and check your work.
Right. And you know, sometimes if we get too much into a habit of doing something, think about your drive to work, your commute. You do it every day, multiple times. You drive to work, you drive home from work. On that road, on that trip that you take, how many stoplights do you see? How long are you waiting at those stoplights? How many other cars do you see? How many buildings do you pass by? Sure, the first handful of times you might be looking at those things because you're trying to figure out where you're going and how to get back home and all of those things. But after you've done that trip, you know, 100 times, you get in your car, your body goes in autopilot, you drive to work. Hopefully you don't crash or run into anybody. You get to work and if you actually took a moment to stop and think back about that drive, I would imagine there would be little that you can remember about that commute that you just took. Maybe it's only 5 minutes, maybe it's a half an hour. But barring something extraordinary happens on that drive, it just falls in the background. So with that habit of driving to work, if you let it run on autopilot, you're not going to be paying attention to those small little details that happen on the drive. So with your practice of your martial arts moves, take notice of those small little details. As you're practicing, don't just practice to say, oh, my instructor said to practice, or because you told the students to practice, they might go home and practice. Give them something small to focus in on. Maybe in class, you notice your students are having difficulty with a turn in their pattern. Okay, so we work on it in class. Maybe you give them some homework. Okay, listen, guys, for homework, I want you to practice this. Yes, sir? Yes, sir. Okay, they go practice it. But you didn't necessarily give them, listen, I want you, as you go home and practice this, I want you to practice and focus on making sure you are turning this way. And while you're turning this way, make sure that you're doing this with your body, you look, and then you move to the next part. By making that more detailed, it will give your students something more concrete to focus on as they're practicing that. That would be like saying, or hearing me say, listen, on the next time you drive to work, I want you to count how many red cars you see. Okay, you get in your car. Okay, there's one, there's one, there's one. That's the same thing for your students. If you give them something small to focus on while they're practicing, that will give them a focus for that. Instead of just them doing it mindlessly on autopilot, not really paying attention or focusing to anything that their body is doing or that they're supposed to be doing, having those little small details, those focuses on the practice will hugely improve the performance of your students. Practice is a habit, okay? And like any other habit, you have to foster it. You have to help to develop that habit. It's not something you can just do occasionally and expect to get the benefits from. So how then would you or should we expect our students to practice? If you're like us, we have told and asked and even sometimes begged our students and maybe even bribed your students to practice. Does that work from time to time? Sure, sometimes. But for that isolated incident that they actually do go home and practice, you know, maybe 50% of them will actually go do that. You should have a lesson plan that includes practice time in your class so that you can be there to help to give the students the feedback for that practice. Not only that, but it'll help to set up the mindset of practicing. It'll help to demystify practice for those students. Because sometimes you have the students, you give them that self-practice time in class. What is self-practice time? Let me back up just a little bit. Self-practice time is time that you take in class that you have the students go over these movements. Listen, hey guys, I'm going to have you guys practice this on your own. I'll be around to check you, but when you get done, I want you to do it again. And when you get done, just do it again. If I come by, I might tweak or change some things, but then you just go back, you just continue to practice it. Just do it over and over again. I have had students come to me after that class and say, wow, that's what practice is? I thought, whatever they thought it was like is not. You just do your stuff, right? So sometimes giving them that opportunity to see, oh, hey, this is what practice is? Oh, that's not so bad. I could probably do that at home. It demystifies practice, right? For whatever reason, I don't know, but sometimes people just really get in their heads about practicing. Oh, they have to have, you have to have the candles on and you have to, you know, whatever it is, but just do your stuff, right? It doesn't take, you know, you don't have to have some huge drawn out system to do it. Just go do your form, go do your pattern, go practice your hand technique, foot technique, form, or whatever it is. Just go do it. Now, self-practice time in class, what that gives us as the instructors is an opportunity to see how the students are able to go through those movements on their own. It's not you guiding them through it. It's not them doing it with another person so they can, you know, sneak a look and, oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do. Oh, that's what that guy's doing. Okay, I got to do that. They're just doing it on their own. They're using their own brain and their own body to go through the movements on their own. That, I think, is a big part of self-practice. So if you have not yet included self-practice time into your daily classes, at least into your weekly classes, meaning do it at least once a week. Hey, listen, I want you guys to do this 3 times. When you're done, do 25 push-ups and then we'll move on together. Whatever the situation for you is. But having that self-practice time in class at least a handful of times throughout your grading cycle would be a huge benefit, not only for you because you can get to see how they are able to interact with those movements. It also lets you know that it really pinpoints who is struggling over those moves, because it's easy to do those moves in a group where they can kind of fall in line and just sort of do what everybody else is doing. But when the students are made to do those on their own, without the help, without the assistance, without visual cues or references for those other people, you will clearly be able to see who knows their stuff and who needs some more work.
It's like the bumper rails at the bowling alley. During class, we are the bumper rails to help guide them in the correct direction. And when we're not there, they're strolling down the lane. And if we don't help them dial in or improve their technique, then they are going to continue to throw the bowling ball into the gutter. So being able to be there for them and help them find the right move or right thing to do while they're in class is going to help them when they go home and practice. And the way that they do it in class when we are there to help them and watch them is probably 30% better than they're going to do it at home. So for example, you're in class and through a mixture of motivation and praise and correction and self-practice and all the things that we use as instructors in class, they do a 100% move. not meaning perfect, because we just talked about not being perfect, but they do a move to 100% of their ability, and it's the best it's going to get at that point in time. When they go home, at the very least, I can expect them to be doing that at a 70%. And actually, excuse me, at the very most, I can expect them to be doing that at a 70%. So that's the best it's going to get at home, which means it's probably going to be worse. It might be a 50 or 40% at home. So if we aren't holding them to that high standard and making sure they're doing things well while they're here, it's only going to worsen or further hurt their own practice when we are not there. And yes, self-practice time is important in class, but that's also your time, like I said, to help set them straight and then give them those moves and make sure they're doing it correctly. So when they go home, they do that practice at home, that self-practice at home, that they're not creating those permanently bad habits. We want to make sure they're doing things correctly, so they're becoming permanent good habits. So that, you know, that goes both ways. You can make that practice, can make that permanent, whether it be a good thing or a bad thing. And it's our responsibility and our job to make sure that they are practicing the right thing so that they create those good permanent habits. And that's not just their martial arts moves. It's their character attributes and their behavior and their manners and their social skills and all those things that we also work on in martial arts, and enforcing those things and making sure that those things are being practiced not only inside the karate studio, but also outside as well, so that they become those permanent good habits.
Practicing the moves in this manner, self-practice time, is kind of like when if you're studying for a test. If you're studying for a test, there's a couple ways that you can help to recall that information. You can read the text, and then reread the text, and reread the text over and over and over again. And that's one way to study for it. Another way is what they call active recall. And so what that means is I read through the text, I close the book, and I write down as many things as I can remember about those texts that I read. Now, you have to try to not go back and you know, do it verbatim. You don't want to, man, I don't remember exactly what the words, just write it as best you can. And what that'll do is that forces you to actually think about those things that you read. How do we break that down for martial arts? Well, we teach a movement. And maybe you do this early on. So for us right now, we just started a new testing cycle. So we've had one class with those students so far. I had new students that I taught three new hand techniques to. I told them what the move was. I showed them what it was. Then we did it together. We did it together two or three times. And I said, okay, now I want you guys to do that. And I'll be around to check and see how you did. So what I did was we talked about what the move was. I showed them it. They did it with me maybe four times. And then I said, okay, now you do that. Now, to be fair, those moves are not very complicated. They're not very demanding. They're not very hard to do. But I still really, I forced them to think about what they were doing. I forced them to actively recall that, having only seen it and done it with me just a handful of times. Okay, now it's your turn. Go do that. Well, I have to remember and actually do something. Yes, yeah, use your brain. Do this thing that I just asked you to do. And then they did it on their own 4, 5, 10 times or so. Then we moved to the next one. And doing that in your class, sometimes having them recall that information before you think or they think they're actually ready to do that will really stretch them and force them to really think about those moves. And by doing that, that makes that focus, like we talked about before, that gives them that focus practice. They're actively thinking about those moves as they're doing them, which will greatly help to benefit them not only in the beginning, but throughout the time that they're learning those moves, because they're actively thinking about it and they had to do that from the beginning. I'm not hand holding them. I'm not spoon feeding them. I'm almost force feeding them the information and say, okay, now you go do that. And then I'm around to check and give that feedback if and when it's needed so they can continue to practice those things. And like we talked about, not have the bad habits, especially from the beginning. But they did it on their own. I didn't have to be there and do it over and over and over again with them. Okay, we did it once, you know, 3, 4 times. Okay, now it's your turn. You do that. And that I found is such a way to not skyrocket. It'll give your students a boost in learning those moves. They'll learn it, you know, much quicker than as if you if you spoon fed them, okay, do this, or if you handhold them, okay, move your body like this, and you tell them every single time, and okay, you do it like this, and you do, you get them go through the mistakes, let them do that, let them feel how it feels on their own body and their own brain, thinking about and moving through those motions, because that will help to make that connection for them.
Talking about this reminds me of the spell check correction method. If we're just holding their hand the whole time and giving them all the answers, it never forces them to engage and critically think about what they're doing, and creates that bad habit, you know, because yes, we have resources like our app and videos they can watch at home and see how the moves are done, but at the end of the day, we're not there with them. And unless they are very serious about their training, they're not going to take the time to pull up the video and do it side by side every time. Or even worse, they may not realize they're doing it wrong. They may think they're doing it correctly the whole time. So, you know, letting them make the mistakes and either helping them discover it was a mistake or letting them find out for themselves that it was a mistake and then figuring out how to correct that mistake is important, because that's a good habit of catching yourself and checking your work, so that when we aren't there to call them out or give them the right answers, they're able to do that for themselves. And it's going to make them even better at practicing, even better at the martial arts as well.
Absolutely.
One thing that you said that I didn't want to skip, because it's very profound and it's something to keep in mind, is forgetting is the default, not the exception. So if I'm teaching you something, it's almost better for me to expect you to forget it than expect you to remember it. Because number one, if you do remember it, then I'll be surprised and I'll be in a better position. But number two, it doesn't set me up for failure in the sense that I'm expecting you to remember these three moves and you remember one of them. And my whole class hinged on the fact that you remembered these three moves. We have to go back and do all those other things over again. So forgetting is the default, not the exception. And keeping that in mind, hoping they can do better than that, but that's going to help them to realize the importance of practice. It's also not going to set us up for failure and expecting too much of them that they're not going to be able to deliver for us.
I encourage you to go through your curriculum and develop practice cards. A practice card can range from a simple flashcard for general terminology, or you can have, like what we have, a more complex practice card system. We have their practice card set up as online surveys. After doing the information on the practice card, they mark that it's complete and the school gets a notification or an email that it's been done. The reason I believe these practice cards are so important is because they'll help your students practice their information outside the classroom. It gives them those things to focus in on at home. If they can work on the information at home outside of the class, of course, they'll be relying on their memory of the information or the skill or the movement. And of course, that is the best way for them to work on and retain that information.
That also gives us a great opportunity to hone in and make that specific practice. Like we always talk about, I don't want to just give you a general thing to do, but it's the perfect chance for me to say, okay, do this specific move this many times, focusing on this thing. We can do that for each and every single move and technique. And it takes that memory out of it, because they don't have to remember the next day, oh yeah, they told me to do this move this many times with this. Because it's right there in front of them. They have it on the card. They look at it. Do this move 10 times. Okay. Check it off. All right. Do this move 10 times. Okay. Check it off. Do this move 7 times. But as you do it, focus on your stance. Okay. Check it off. And it allows us an easy way to deliver that specific practice guideline, and then also allows us to know that's what they are practicing when they do it. Because I could tell you to practice, but you go home, I don't know what you did. I'm not sure. But you do that check, you do that card, you check it off, I know exactly what you did.
And oftentimes you tell that student to go home and practice, and they said, I did practice. Okay, what did you practice? Well, I practiced all of the old information. They practice zero of the new. Have you found that to be true? Did you go home and practice like I asked? Oh, yes, sir. Well, okay, well, what specifically did you practice? Well, I practiced this, this, and this. All the old stuff. Well, how come you didn't practice the new stuff? Silence. Well, I don't know. Well, it would have been nice if you actually practiced the new stuff, because you already knew the old stuff. Sorry to...
No, that's good. That's a good addition. And also the nice thing too, and you might be mentioning this later, I'm not sure, but because we get notified they did it, next time I see that person in class, I can say, hey, I saw you did your practice card. Good job. That helps reinforce that positive habit in them. But then everyone else in class hears that kid or that student get the praise for doing that practice card and maybe instills or plants that little seed inside of them that thinking, oh, maybe I should do that practice card too. Get that extra practice in. So not only having the cards, but also being able to know who did them, when they did them, and get that feedback is important too, because we can then use that as a method of praise or correction or motivation for our students.
So what does a practice card look like? Well, for each and every belt level we have, excluding white belts, and I'll touch on why that is in just a moment, but for each of our belt ranks, we have practice cards. And actually, they have multiple practice cards. So they have between 5 and 7 practice cards per grading cycle. That seems like a lot. Of course, they're not getting them all at one time. They wait about 2 weeks before they get the first one. And the first one is simply practice this new hand technique 5 times on your right side. Practice this new hand technique 5 times on your left side. Check the box when you're done. That's it. So it's 5, maybe 10 minutes worth of work. They practice. I get to know they practice specifically this side of their body and specifically this side of their body. They send it back. Great. Hey, awesome, man. I seen you did that practice card number one. Good job. Then, you know, a week later, they get another one. Now they're on kicks. Okay, practice this kick 5 times on the left side. Practice this kick 5 times on the right side. Check the box when you're done. Okay, great. Send it back. Hey, awesome, buddy. You did those kicks. Very good. Very good. You know, you did that practice card number 2. Practice card number 3. Again, a week later. You know, they practice their form, their kata, their pattern of moves, you know, 5 times. Great. Done. Okay, the next practice card, perhaps they do whatever self-defense situation they have for, so front choke or side to whatever the self-defense is. Practice that 5 times. Great. Check the box. Done. Now, as they start to go a little bit later on in the grading cycle, they start to add more things in. So instead of it being only their hand techniques, only their foot techniques, or only this, it's okay, now practice your hand and foot techniques. Or perhaps it's review your older material, your older hand techniques, your older forms, katas, patterns. And then, you know, the next one is, okay, now that you've practiced that new self-defense, now practice your older self-defense. And then later on still, leading up to their belt test, especially for the upper ranks, because they have much more information, okay, now practice your hand techniques, all of them. Practice your foot techniques, all of them. Check the box. Okay, great. Practice all of the forms you know. Check the box. Okay, now practice all of your self-defense and so on. So by the time they have done their whole grading cycle, again, they have between 5 and 7 practice cards, and we wait 2 weeks. And the reason we wait 2 weeks before we send out that first one is so that they have enough time to at least work on and know and understand at least a little bit of those moves. And depending on where we fall in the year, we might be gone for Thanksgiving or Christmas break or whatever the holiday is. So I put 2 weeks in there just so there's enough time that they've at least done those moves one or hopefully multiple times by that. Just to have a airproof method so that's the same for everything. I don't have to go in and tweak it. So once it was done, it's just done. It's on autopilot. They get marked to the new rank in our system. 2 weeks later, they get sent the first survey. It goes to the email, open the email, practice. Okay, check the box. We get it back. They did it. Now, one thing that the practice card system hinges on is us in class, the instructors. At the end of class, and I even have it written in the lesson plan for that day, hey, remind the students about practice card number 1. And then, you know, the next class, hey, remind the students about practice card number 1. And then the following week, of course, remind the students about practice card number 2, and so on, all the way through the grading cycle. What that does is, hopefully, of course, the students are going to hear this. But furthermore, the parents are really who I want to hear that. Right? I want them to help and be on board with practicing. Oh, hey, I got this practice card in your email. I heard Master Bean talk about this. Let's see what this is. Oh, okay, I want you to do this 5 times. Okay, do that. Okay, great. Well, check that box. All right, do this one. Okay, great. Check that box. Submit. Oh, that was easy. Cool. done. And then a week later, they get the same thing. Now, and again, a big part of this is setting this up from the beginning. Don't do this as a test run with like your upper belts, because they won't have that habit. They won't know to look for that. It'll just be another thing for them to do. But if you start this from the beginning, you start this from the yellow belts, and I'm getting to white belts, that'll be next. If you start this from the yellow belts on up, that instills that practiced habit from the beginning. If they're with you, they hear the practice card, oh yeah, yep, I got to do that. Then as they go through the ranks, through your cycle, through your program, they know that that's just a part of the process. They know that they learn the information, and then a week or so later, okay, yep, I got to do that practice card. Yep, I got to do this practice card. And that's going to greatly benefit and help your students in so many ways. Now, white belts, why don't white belts get practice cards? Well, depending on your school, you might be able to do practice cards for white belts. For us, the way our introductory program works is they come in at any point in our 3-month cycle. And depending on where they come in at, depends on if they test on that very next test or if they have to wait past the test in order to go to the next one, just so they have enough time in to really understand and learn those movements. The reason they don't get practice cards is because not every white belt starts right at the beginning of the grading cycle. So I can't send them a automatic dripped email that has their practice card in it because I don't know exactly where they're at in the lesson plan. I don't know where they're at in our curriculum. But at yellow belt, that's when it starts. And sometimes for the white belt, we even say, hey, listen, now as you are getting ready for your belt test, I just want to let you guys know that when you're a yellow belt, of course, you'll be coming to class, you'll be practicing at home, but you'll also have practice cards, and you kind of can introduce that concept to them so that depending on if they test in that cycle or they test in the following one, doesn't matter, they have at least heard and know that something like that is or might be coming down the road for them. We have this whole practice card system set up automatically to email the students at specific intervals after they get their new rank. Again, we wait about 2 weeks, and then they get their first practice card, and then it's pretty well every week up until belt testing. Depending on their rank, the lower belts only have about 5, and as they move to the intermediate level, they have 6, and they move to the advanced level, they have 7, just because the material gets more and more, it adds on each time.
Would you say it gets more advanced?
It does get more advanced as they progress through the ranks, yes, sir. This method, again, may seem like too much, but if you only ask a little from your students, they will only give you a little. If you ask for a little effort, they will give you little effort. Of course, I know not everybody is going to complete these practice cards, but the ones who do, as you can imagine, excel in class. They pass their belt tests with flying colors, and it is clear to see those students who actually do those practice cards. Now, of course, some of that is we get to know, we see that practice card come back to us. And then on top of that, we commend that person for doing that. And so maybe that person is standing out a little bit in our eyes, and maybe there's, you know, some sort of a bias going on there. I understand that, but I'm willing to take it. It was worth the effort to make those practice cards and put those in the effort if it's going to benefit the students. The important information, if you do decide to undertake this method, is again to start from the beginning. Don't start this halfway through your, you know, don't start with the black belts or the advanced level. Start from the beginning. Start with the you know, the most basic level you can. If you can start with white belts, do that. But make sure that if you do this, that you are able to scale it. Meaning don't have it only for your white belt level and then it never happens ever again because you didn't take the time to make the rest of them. Make it, give it to the white belts, get some feedback, or the yellow belts, or whatever, get some feedback, and then that will help to boost your energy, it'll help to boost your focus, your concentration on doing that, because you'll be able to hear and see the benefits from that time that you spent. It'll be time well spent, I promise, to do this. We need to be there to help our students to develop these good practicing habits from the beginning. Part of this, especially in the beginning, if you do decide to do this, is give these out and say, hey, listen, we're trying something different. just let them know, you know, hey, we're trying something different. I want to give these guys, give these practice cards to you. What I think is going to happen is these are going to give you something concrete to focus on as you are practicing your moves at home. And then ask for feedback. This feedback will be vital for you to set up the rest of your levels. Maybe you have too much on each of them. Maybe it took them, you know, 10 minutes to go through that practice card. Maybe that's too much. Maybe they only did a minute and a half of practice, whatever it is. But get the feedback and try to tailor that to help create the rest of the practice cards for that level and, of course, the rest of the practice cards for your program. Helping your students to develop the habit of practicing will, of course, be helpful to you as an instructor. But, of course, instilling that hard work ethic will be key to your students, not only in your school, in your program, but to wherever else they go, whatever else they do later on. Instilling that focus, that habit of practicing, of working on something, even though it's challenging, even though it's difficult, will help them carry that work ethic over into whatever else they do.
Driving that point home, having that good work ethic and that good positive habit of practicing is not with the intention of them becoming perfect. It's not they keep doing this over and over and over again, and after you've done it the 100 millionth time, that next time is perfection. You transcend in some kind of martial arts fireball or something. But again, the idea is that we want to be reinforcing these positive practicing habits and reinforcing the positive technique so that when they are practicing, they're creating the permanent good or permanently correct technique and correct movements. Not to be perfect, but to be aware that what we're doing has an impact and it's going to be permanent if we continue to practice certain ways, and helping them to practice correctly, giving them guidance in class so that when they practice at home, they are practicing correctly and creating that permanently good habit.
Right. And, you know, of course, all of your students have heard at some point in time, practice makes perfect. Or, no, that's not right. Perfect practice makes perfect. You know, for those really, you know, overachievers, letting them know that that is not true. Tell them, hey, listen, you know, you've heard practice makes perfect. All the things that we talked about here today, you hopefully now understand and at least partially agree with the perfect fallacy, right? We can't be perfect. You know, it's not something that humans can be. Again, we talked about, you don't do that move a million times. Okay, great. Now I'm a fireball karate master because I did a million times. Nope, that doesn't work that way. Right?
And it's not a hopeless kind of saying either. It doesn't mean, hey, you'll never be perfect, so don't even try. If anything, it's a humbling realization, but it gives you something to achieve for or something to work toward. No, you won't be perfect, but you can still improve no matter what, which, if you can't reach that perfection, then in theory, you can keep improving forever. It's not a discouraging type thing. It's not to say, hey, you should never practice, or you should give up martial arts, or you shouldn't try because you'll never be perfect. But it gives you that endless improvement to strive for, because if you never reach perfection, then you're just going to keep improving. And it is a fluctuation. You know, sometimes your move's going to be really good and then it might go down. You have to put some extra work in to make it better again. And it's going to be an ups and downs to those things as well. So I don't mean it in a way that is hopeless and I'm telling you to give up practicing because there's no point. Quite the opposite, actually. Continue practicing to either maintain or improve yourself as long as you are training martial arts. And yet again, even outside of the martial arts studio and other aspects of your life as well.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, talking about that, outside of the martial arts, this same practicing makes perfect rule applies, because it's not, you know, only in martial arts you can't be perfect. I don't believe that you can be perfect in doing anything. So striving for that perfect, I think, will only set up your students for failure. And so if you can help to teach them that, or at least let them hear that, you know, perfect is not something that we can be. Practice makes perfect is not true. Here's why. Perfect practice makes perfect also doesn't make sense, because here's why. And hopefully they can carry that over to other aspects, so they're not setting themselves up for failure in whatever it is they do, not just the martial arts, but in whatever they do.
Yes, sir. That's a good reminder and good lesson for all of us, I think.
Absolutely.
Anything else to add today, sir?
I think that's it.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. As always, you can find us online on the socials. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Reddit, Twitter, Instagram. Don't forget to dive in and check out all our podcast videos as well. Wherever you're listening to us on, we are still available in other places. So either YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, countless other podcast providers, different options for you to listen and engage us.
And if you're on Spotify, we now have video podcasts on Spotify. So go check that out.
Yes, sir.
Until next time, I'm Chris Bean.
And I'm Chris Kent.